Last week, you remember, we were on the 30th chapter, remember? And we covered up to the 24th verse. And you guys had a lot of questions on the remainder of the chapter. And I says, I can't go into that until this week because the 31st chapter answers those questions. So what I want to have is Jeff, I want Jeff to read, starting Genesis 30, verse 25, all the way through chapter 31 of Genesis.
As soon as Rachel had born Yosef, Yaakov said to Laban, "Send me away, that I may go to my own home and country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served you, that I may go, for you know the service that I have given you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your sight, I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Name your wages, and I will give it." Yaakov said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your livestock have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" He said, "What shall I give you?" Yaakov said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all of your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black lamb, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. For honesty will answer for me later, when you come to look into my wages with you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted stolen." Laban said, "Good, let it be as you have said." But that day Laban removed the male goats that were striped and spotted, and all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white on it, and every lamb that was black, and put them in the charge of his sons. And he set a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Yaakov. Yaakov pastured the rest of Laban's flock. When Yaakov took fresh sticks of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white streaks in them, exposing the white of the sticks, he set the sticks that he had peeled in front of the flocks in the troughs, that is, the watering places, where the flocks came to drink. And since they bred when they came to drink, the flocks bred in front of the sticks, and so the flocks brought forth stripes, speckled and spotted. And Yaakov separated the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the striped, and all the black in front of Laban. He put his own droves apart and did not put them with Laban's stock. Whenever the stronger of the flock were breeding, Yaakov would lay the sticks in the troughs before the eyes of the flock, that they might breed among the sticks. But for the feebler of the flock, he would not lay them there. So the feebler would be Laban's, and the stronger Yaakov's. Thus the man increased greatly and had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys. Now Yaakov heard that the sons of Laban were saying, "Yaakov has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has gained all this wealth." And Yaakov saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. Then the Lord said to Yaakov, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you." So Yaakov sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field where his flock was and said to them, "I see that your father does not regard me with favor as he did before. But the God of my father has been with me. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not permit him to harm me. If he said, 'The spotted shall be your wages,' and all the flock bore spotted, and if he said, 'The stripes shall be your wages,' then all the flock bore striped. Thus, God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. In the breeding season of the flock, I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream that the goats that mated with the flock were striped, spotted, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Yaakov, and I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift up your eyes and see. All the goats that mate with the flock are striped, spotted, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and made a vow to me. Now arise, go from this land and return to the land of your kindred. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Is there any portion or inheritance left to us in our father's house? Are we not regarded by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he indeed devoured our money. All the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do. So Yaakov rose and set his sons and his wives on camels. He drove away all his livestock, all his property that he had gained, the livestock in his possession that he had acquired in Padan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan, to his father Yitzhak. Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole her father's household gods. And Yaakov tricked Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he intended to flee. He fled with all that he had and arose and crossed the Euphrates and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. When it was told Laban on the third day that Yaakov had fled, he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him for 7 days and followed close after him into the hill country of Gilead. But God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream by night and said to him, Be careful not to say anything to Yaakov, either good or bad. And Laban overtook Yaakov. Now Yaakov had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen pitched tents in the hill country of Gilead. And Laban said to Yaakov, What have you done that you have tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and trick me and did not tell me, so that I might have sent you away with mirth and songs, with tambourine and lyre? Why did you not permit me to kiss my sons and my daughters farewell? Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, Be careful not to say anything to Yaakov, either good or bad. And now you have gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Yaakov answered and said to Laban, Because I was afraid, for I thought you would take your daughters with me by force. Anyone with whom you find your God shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what I have that is yours, and take it. Now Yaakov did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So Laban went into Yaakov's tent and into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two female servants, but he did not find them. And he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's. Now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. Laban felt all about the tent, but he did not find them. And she said to her father, Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the way of women is upon me. So he searched, but did not find the household gods. Then Yaakov became angry and berated Laban. Yaakov said to Laban, What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? For you have felt throughout all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. What was torn by wild beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the cold by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your 2 daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Yitzhak had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Then Laban answered and said to Yaakov, the daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have borne? Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So Yaakov took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Yaakov said to his kinsmen, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Yegar Sahaduta, but Yaakov called it Galid. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me today. Therefore, he named it Galid and Mizpah. For he said, the Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Then Laban said to Yaakov, see this heap and the pillar, which I have set before you and me? This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me, to do harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Yaakov swore by the fear of his father Yitzhak, and Yaakov offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. Early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned home.
Interesting story, isn't it? What does that do with us? Nothing, right? We go to the next chapter. So, some of your comments last week. Do you remember some of the questions you had last week about this part? What do you think was taking place here in the 30th chapter, the last part of it? Yes?
Wasn't it about idols? We were having
about
a question.
About idols? I'm sorry, what?
Is it about the idols?
Okay, that's one of the issues. What stands out that is... would bring a question to your mind. Here you go.
It was about the spots of the
the spots. Or what's called the gray spots, or the ring spots, rings around the, and a certain, first thing that we read here in this section that now, he said he has served, Laban the 6 years. So we get into the story later on, by the time we get to the 31st chapter, we're talking 6 years have gone by from the end of chapter 30 to the beginning of chapter 31. 6 years have gone by. And Laban's sons were seeing what was going on. All right? And so they went and told their father what was going on. Now, let me ask you a real serious question before we go to the next chapter of 31. Was Jacob doing something mysterious and clever that no one else knew how to do, but he did?
It's commonly done today, so no.
Okay. Commonly done today, so the answer is no. So, why did he do it?
To increase his flock.
Whose flock?
Jacob's.
All right. Well, we have to ask ourselves some interesting questions. Either Jacob had some inside maneuverability with these certain rods, certain trees, to do certain things, to open up and bear the bark on them, and it did something to, quote, the rams and the male sheep and the goats, male goats. Now, as we look at this thing, we have to ask ourselves, what is this point all about? All right? Do you have any other ideas? Okay, let's go to chapter 31 then. Now, this is 6 years later, and his son said something. Laban's son said it, told him what was going on. But before we do, there's very fascinating things to pay attention to what's going on here. Did you notice there was a 3 days journey? Interesting. Laban left for 3 days. And during the 3 days, this is what Jacob did to the bark. So there's no, quote, witness, because the brothers were taking care of their father's flock, making sure that they got their fair share. And lo and behold, did they tell their father, you know how he did it? He went and took some bark, he went and took some sticks, he took some rods, and he cut off and had some of the exposure of some of the bare bark. You know, Dad, he was smart, we should do that. No, they had no idea. They had no idea how he did it or why it was done. So when his father, Laban means white, by the way, just let you know that. So he's a white guy. Anyway. And Jacob had done his job. But then when he has done this, when Laban realized what took place, now it says his countenance fell. Now it doesn't mean he was angry now. Furious. Because he'd been outsmarted. And of course, who are you going to accuse who outsmarted you? The person you that did it to you, right? Verse 3. Yahuwah said to Jacob, return to thy land and thy kindred, and I'll be with you. So 6 years have passed, and Yahuwah walked up and contacted him. We have never had any information from him contacting him during the entire time until now. Not necessarily. Because something happened before then. Well, listen very carefully. And Jacob sent and called, of course, Rachel and Leah and all their family and all the flock and all the stuff to be able to take off. He's going to take off. And he says, your father has, verse 7, has deceived me and charged my wages 10 times. 10 times. Very interesting number, 10. Is there any other thing that we've read up to this point aware of what 10 means? Now, don't go book of Exodus right now. Now, 10 tells you something. It's like, that's what we would call that, that's the line in the sand. Number 10, don't go any farther. So this particular point in Jacob's life, the wages have been changed. Doesn't tell you how it changed, doesn't tell when it was changed, doesn't tell the method by which it changed, but nonetheless, it changes. And he said now, but Elohim suffered him not to hurt me. Elohim didn't allow him to hurt me. It's an interesting statement he would say at this point in time, because right now Laban is very angry, and Laban's ready to not give him a piece of his mind, but give him something else, all right? Maybe in a death sentence. And verse 10, and it came to pass at the time when the flock conceived, that, what did he do? I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream. What did he see? What did he see? Behold, rams which leaped upon the flock, rings, rated, speckled, and gray spotted. That's what he saw in the dream. And he said, he's talking to his daughter, I mean, his wives right now, just the two of them. Remember, it's very important to know, he's talking about Rachel and Leah, and not the other two women. And the angel of Elohim spoke to him in that dream. And he said, yes, hello, yeah, oh, hi. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams that leap upon the flock, ringed, rigged, and spotted, speckled and gray spotted. And I have seen all of Laban's does unto thee. So now, the reason why all that took place is because God gave him a dream, and it wasn't the act of the rods. It was an act of what? On Jacob's point.
Obedience.
A what?
Obedience.
No. No, 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 no. He did, without a say, you obey or you're dead.
No.
No. What is the dream telling you? Why did he respond to it? What was his purpose? You don't remember. Okay, let's backtrack here just a little bit. Verse 3. And Yahuwah said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with you. Now is that an act of obedience? Or is that an act of a someone who believed? It's an act of righteousness upon Jacob's point. God said, do this like it did to Abraham and like it did to Isaac. Now he's doing it to Jacob. He did it earlier before about the dream on the rock. But now he comes, and what was Jacob's response? He believed him. Yes.
He also did it to Leah when, to Rachel when he saw that Leah had children, Rachel didn't. And he also did it to Leah when Rachel was the favorite wife. So oftentimes if there's an inequality, he is the great equalizer.
So when when Jacob lifted up his eyes and he saw what was happening in the dream, he responded to the dream because he believed God. Not because obedience, because he could get killed if he doesn't. He trusted him. He had confidence in God. He believed what he had to say, and he acted upon what Elohim said to him. This should be a lesson for us, is it not? We should not be worried about obeying God. We should be worried, we should be concerned with, oh, he said this, I'm going to act upon it. That's what the whole Torah is all about. That's the whole book of Genesis is all about. Respond. And guess what happens? It will happen. And here we have Jacob at this particular point in time in his life. And he's ready to take off. Verse 13. This is still Elohim talking to him. This is a promise from Elohim. And he said, I, Elohim of Bethel. So Jacob knew exactly where that location was at. Why? Because he put a pillar there, or took a stone in his head on, put a pillar, raised it upright, and he says, for sure, Elohim is here. This is the house of Elohim. Not a physical house, but the presence of this is where God, the Elohim, dwells. And he says, where thou anointed the pillar, where thou vowed a vow unto me. Remember, I told you the difference between a vow? What is a vow compared to an oath? You remember? One's a promise, and you're not using the name of God within it. A vow is just using the name of God in it. Two different kind of patterns. Now arise and get thee from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. Now this is what he saw in the dream. The dream told him that. But the dream told him, you will be blessed by abundance of cattle, actually blessed of flock, both sheep and goats. And he believed him. And of course, you know, Rachel and Leah said, well, their dad took all their money anyway. They had a dowry, they had money, they had their own, but their dad just kind of confiscated it, quote, utilized it, quote, did whatever you want to think he did with it. He didn't honor his daughter's property, let's put it that way. So Laban was not a good guy. Might have been the brother of Rachel, but he wasn't a good guy. Sorry, what?
God used him anyway.
Oh, yes. And of course they rose up, Jacob, and took off, and he went and fled. And he fled to and to go into the land of his father, Isaac, and the land of Canaan. So he went to start to go back to where he came from. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen an image. Now, I don't know what it is, don't care, doesn't matter. But the object taking place is very fascinating. Let me ask you a question. Now, he's out there shearing his sheep. What would make the man go after Jacob? Was it because of the flock, the sheep? Now, is that something that Rachel thought about doing because she liked the idol? Or was it God saying, I'm sending you, Laban, after him? We could say, well, no, that's not happened. We could have all sorts of analysis, but let's just talk about what's going on here, because God had, we read the story about Laban and Jacob. It's very paralleling another event that took place hundreds of years later. Remember the 3-day journey? It shows up again. And so, guess what? Jacob had took away all the things, unaware of what happened. And he didn't. But he fled all the way to a place, and he set his face against a certain mountain. What was the name of the mountain? Gilead. Now remember, was it named Gilead before? Well, let's careful what the word in here, so you'll understand something about Gilead. It's not a name of a man. It's the name of a place. And it was told to Laban on the third day. Interesting. On the third day that Jacob had fled. So Jacob had 3 days' journey already ahead of him. Remember, Jacob had all this flock, and all the kids, and men servants, and maid servants, and cattle, and donkeys, and everything else. And so he wasn't moving at a very high rate of speed. Not moving very fast at all, in fact. And verse 23, very fascinating terminology. I don't think it's there by accident. How many days did it take for Laban to catch up? Oh, why wasn't it 3? Why wasn't it 2? Why wasn't it 10? Why was it 5 days ago?
It was already out 3 days.
What is 7? Why is 7 so important here? No, Jacob, no, he heard on the third day. Now he's pursuing Jacob. And it took him 7 days to get there. That's quite a long trip, don't you think? Is there anything else that you could parallel that with something that took place later on, hundreds of years later? When Pharaoh, on the third day, found out they weren't coming back, how many days did it take him from the time he found out to get to up, catch up with them? 7 days! Now, that's very paralleling and very interesting to take a look at and realize this is fascinating. On the third day, he's already gone for 3 days. During the time of the Pharaoh, they were on the third day, where were they? They were on the edge of the wilderness. Alright? And then Pharaoh ran after them. It took him from that point there, it took 7 days, because the 15th day took him 7 days to get there. Fascinating parallel. Yes, Ellie.
Well, isn't it interesting also? I don't know if it's somewhere else, but in verse 24, it says Laban the Syrian. And I don't, does he call him a Syrian anywhere?
The land, okay, at the time of this writing, okay, the time of the writing was written many years later. At the time of the writing, that land was called Syria. All right. So he was from the land of Syria, or become a Syrian. Even prophecy says that God says, "I have taken you, I've taken your father out of Syria," meaning Jacob. So it's a land. It's a name that they're using to catch us up on history, on a point in time. It's like Gilead. Yeah, Gilead wasn't named Gilead until after Jacob named it. But you hear the name Gilead before, don't you? Jacob is the one that named this place. No one else did, just him. That's what it says here, right? Remember? That's where the word came from. But as he's journeying, going after him, guess who came and gave him a really terrible nightmare? So remember, Elohim can give nightmares to people. And this one was one of them. You touch him, you don't curse him, nor do you bless him. You give him no blessing, you give him no cursing. You're dead if you do. And so here he was. Elohim said, don't even lay and speak bad about him. And Laban overtook Jacob. Jacob pitched his tents in the mount. And Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. Word Gilead, by the way, just means a rocky region. But that's the location of it. As we peer it on farther down, we find out what the name really means. It came in afterwards and not before. Now we have to still ask ourselves a question. What does that have to do with us? I had to do with Jacob, yeah. I had to do something with Laban, yeah. I had to do something with Rachel, yeah. And Leah, yeah. But me? Us in this room? There's no connection here, right? There is nothing there that makes us say, okay, I understand the story, and I'm part of the story. And we don't see it, right? It's hard to see. Let's go on. Of course, your old Laban said to Jacob, now why did you do this? Why did you take it away? If I knew you were taking it away, I could be able to kiss my kids goodbye, kiss my daughter goodbye, and we would have had mirth and tampering, we would have had dancing, we would singing, and with joy, you'd walk out, you'd leave here. However, Laban was already angry at him, right? And God, are you born? Don't kill him. Don't speak bad of him. Don't bless him. Don't curse him. And so, all they could do was just say, well, all right. But, verse 29, it is in the power of my hand, this is Laban speaking, to hurt you. I mean, really do harm to him. But Elohim of your father, fascinating terminology, spoke unto me yesterday night, or the night before, saying, don't touch him. Don't bless him, and don't curse him. That's fascinating terminology, don't you think? The enemy, who was a friend, is now the enemy, and God is telling this friend who has become the enemy, which God has something to do with it, by the way, because he had to get Jacob out of there, had to get Jacob out of there so fast and so quick that he had to move his flock out because he knew his father-in-law was mad against him, and he felt, okay, once I leave, he'll get used to me not being gone. However, Rachel took something, made him attack, made him go after. And so he said, I can't touch you. Now, verse 30, thou shalt needs to be gone because thou art sore longing for your father's house. Therefore, hath thou stolen my, I'm using the word in Hebrew, why have you stolen my Elohim? The word image is not there. It's Elohim. Why have you stolen my Elohim? And so we have this, by the way, just for you, somebody tell me the definition of Elohim.
Plural of God.
Plural of God. What does that mean though? Elohim. It's plural, but what is the El though about? What does that name mean? What? Powerful one. A mighty one. Now, let me ask you some questions. Biblically speaking, they use the word Elohim a lot of times, referring to someone who has power. Power. Lots of it. If he's just an El, he's got one power. Elohim, he's got many powers. That's what basically the Greek word, Hebrew word, basically melts down to in the simplest form. Now we come here. So someone has power or authority in Laban's life. And that particular power, whatever it may be, what was it? We think it's stone or rock or, you know. No, the principalities of the air are called Elohim. Did you know that? Why are they called Elohim? Because they have powers. The archangels are Elohims. They have powers. It's a generic word, has a meaning. Now we talk about the God of the Old Testament, he uses the word Yahweh, or Yahuwah, or Yah, to identify which one has the greatest power of them all. Alright, so we have to kind of understand that a little bit in Hebrew, though it's not necessary here. What was so funny about this, that Laban couldn't do good, and he couldn't do bad. See, he wanted to make a pact. And he says, I was afraid of you, that you would take by force your daughters from me. He was afraid because Laban obviously had more power. He had more manpower. He had more wealth. He had more everything, overwhelming more than Jacob had, although Jacob looked like he was very rich by the time we get on the story in the next chapter. Let's continue on here. And he says, what's in verse 32? With whatsoever thou find thy Elohim, let him not live. Now, it was a very dangerous statement he made, but nonetheless, it wasn't found. We won't go through that story right now. Pretty long and pretty lengthy. And of course, Jacob was mad at him, verse 36, because he couldn't find it. And Rachel outmaneuvered her father. Lied to him, right? Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. We assume she lied, but maybe, maybe not. And when we get on farther with Rachel, we're going to find out why. Rachel's a very important person of a future thing that takes place. So try to remember her actions here. Remember her, how she envied? Keep those things in mind. Remember how times she tried to outmaneuver her sister? Keep those things in mind. Remember she struggled with her sister? Keep those things in mind. It wasn't Leah that was struggling. It was Rachel that was struggling. That's why she named one of their sons the struggler, the one who struggles for me, or my struggler. Okay, so we go down here, verse 34. Is that for 20 years in thy house I have served thee 14 years for two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle or thy flock. And thou hast chased me, charged me white wages 10 times. Except for the Elohim of my father, the Elohim of Abram, and what? Why did he use the word fear? Why didn't he say the Elohim of Isaac? Why did he say fear? Don't you find that interesting? Later on it says the same thing. Fear of Isaac. Now, what was Elohim known for, or I should say what Yahuwah was known for, with Abraham? What is God's relationship to Abraham and Abraham's relationship with God? Friends! What is the relationship between Isaac and God and Isaac? Fear! He put on the stake! And he would be cut!
Yes.
And be killed! You think fear would have struck him? Or do you think, oh no, this piece of cake, I can do it. Fear struck him. And remember when he blessed Jacob, and then Esau came in, and he said, oh, he trembled because, oh my, Jacob will receive for sure the blessings. And Esau says, what do you have anything for me? And all he says, there'll come a time when you will break the yoke off your neck that your brother has put upon you. That hasn't happened yet. We're still at this point. So it's a prophecy. Let's go down to they're making this pack. All right. And verse 45, took a stone and set it upright as like a pillar. Jacob did. And Jacob said unto his brother, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. Verse 27. And Laban called it the heap Jerad Shahadutah. Witness heap. Means for the verb to gather and to testify. That's all that word really means. And Jacob called it Gilead, which means witness of a heap of stones. That's what Gilead means, a witness of heap of stones. What was the witness for? Do you remember what it said? We read it. What? What was the covenant? Neither one are to cross over that spot. Remember, you're not to bless him, nor are you going to curse him. Laban was not allowed to enter into the land of Canaan. And Laban said, this heap, a witness between me and thee this day, therefore the name of it is called Gilead. That's what Jacob called it. And Mitzpah. Do you know what a Mitzpah is? The simple definition of it, it's a watchtower. Mitzpah, a watchtower. Someone there is watching what's going on. Watching. Seeing who violates what on this agreement. And of course they sat down and they had dinner together. When you have dinner together, that is the way you are going to agree to the covenant. Always have a dinner in relationship to a covenant. Biblically speaking, it's always a surety. It's not just a handshake. We're sitting down at the table and we're, quote, breaking bread, end of quote. All right. Now, we have some questions here, right? So what are your questions? Yes.
Why is it that the sheep viewing this stuff changed the color of their skin and stuff like that?
Jacob earlier already separated all the rams, the male rams, the male sheep, who already had been stripes and gray spots and striped. He separated them from the pure ones. The pure ones were given unto Laban. He took them, the ones. Now, in the dream, he was told this was going to take place. All right? And he saw in the dream all the rams that he had and all the male sheep he had were, quote, leaping upon the other sheep. God working. Okay, this is the point. This is not a story of how smart Jacob was. We'll get farther on down how humiliated he became. How weak he became. We'll find out, because this is not a wisdom of man with great knowledge, great wisdom, great understanding. This is a man who took and believed and trusted God when he said, I will increase you and multiply you. You remember at the time we read with, he was at Bethel? And God said, I will bless you with abundance and you'll come back. Now, Jacob didn't know how. He wasn't told an inside story. After all those years, in the last, quote, 6 years, fascinating terminology, at the beginning of the sixth year, God increased his wealth abundantly. Just 6 years. How would you like to be wealthy in 6 years? And he had so much that you would take the loss of your boss's loss, and he would know about it. Yes.
The point is that Jacob trusted God.
Trusted God.
That's the whole point.
And the point is, how do we relate to that? We have gone through the book of Abraham, how he related to God and trusted God, and that we see how God works with Abraham. Then we see with Isaac. We saw where Isaac trusted God and God worked with him and blessed him. It isn't the smartness of Abraham that did it. Abraham didn't win the war because Abraham was a better general at all. He came after the war. The war was finished. He destroyed 4 empires. And lo and behold, he knew exactly who gave him that power and that great. And that's why he lifted his hand unto El Elyon. Now, what about Jacob? What about Isaac? We see a pattern how God, he says, stay in the land. Do not move. And well after well after well after well, I think I found 6 or 7 of them, were always damaged, covered up, and by the enemy. Right? Even though Isaac, was richer, more stronger, more powerful, and mightier than the other man. And the other man had to come up and make an agreement with him, make a covenant with him, because that man was afraid. Let's take it on to Jacob here for a minute. Now we see that Jacob said, I was afraid. Now who's afraid? Laban is afraid. He's the one who's getting the bad end of the stick. Yes?
Oh, I was just going to say, over and over and over, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, why is this? Because they trusted. It's about trusting. It's about faith, trusting, even all through the New Testament. Brit Hadashah, trusting that all through Hebrews.
So how does this story relate to me today when it's so long ago? How can I connect to such a story that makes no sense to my brain because I wasn't there. I'm not a farmer. I'm not a cattle guy. I'm not a sheep guy. I'm not a goat guy. I don't have a bunch of camels. I don't have a bunch of people. I don't have any slaves. I don't have any men service, man service. I have nothing. Except I'm in debt. How should I relate to it?
Because Messiah said, no man can come to me unless the Father draws him. And the Father told Abraham, I'm picking you, and I'm picking your kid, the one that he wanted. And he picked Jacob, the one that he wanted. And then he picked Jacob's kids, the ones that he wanted. Because he does the choosing, and he picked us.
What we do see in the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Rachel, and Leah, and Sarah, is that God is directly involved with it. He's not just, oh, I think I'll just do this and see what happens. No, he does it to bring about something. What is he trying to bring about? His will. He'll bring about his will. Do you believe that God actually is doing to you? Now, ask yourself a real serious question. You, in the Christian world, when something starts going bad, you blame the devil. Oh, the devil made me do that. The devil did. The devil outsmarted. The devil, he kept me away from God. The devil did. Was the devil there? No. Who was there? God. God brought on the trials to Abraham. God brought on the trials to Isaac. God brought on the trials to Jacob. And God's going to bring on the trials to all of the sons. It is God who is involved with his creation, not the devil. And you have to know that when you are in a trial or a difficulty, you don't know. You say, oh, the devil's attacking me. Why don't you just ask God and say, okay, God, what? I missed something. Oh, I'm going to this trial for a reason. Now, Jacob didn't know what his trial was for. He didn't know where he was going with it. Did Abraham know when God said, I want you to go to the land of Canaan, that his future was already laid out, planned, he had everything by detail? No, he just went. He just went. He trusted. Now, do you think Abraham was thinking, well, you know what? When I leave the land of Ur, I'm going to come back and I'm going to conquer and destroy those five empires with my bigger army. No. He only had, what, 300 people? And those four powers had a lot more military men capable of war. And God destroyed those men. So when you run into a trial, this is what I'm trying to say to you today. Before we go in the next chapter. These are not just stories of some kind of future thing. Yes, it's in there. Yes, there are points in it. Yes, it will point to something that's future. But know that everything that's in the prophecies is something that God had in mind, and he's going to carry it out, and no matter how bad it is or how good it is. Now, look at a man named Jeremiah. Do you think the devil made him throw him in the pile of, you know, crap? Or did it do God? God. And he cried out to God, get me out of here. He said, well, maybe not. Just sit there for a while. Because I want other people to see you. I want to see other people see you go through a hard time. I want to see other people. Now, Ezekiel, in his last message, we'll talk about that much later on. The first part of Ezekiel, by the way, the first seven chapters of Ezekiel, is the very last thing he wrote. Not the first thing. And he was bitter and angry. And guess what? He still had to do the job. We can find fault with people. That's our problem. Human beings, for some reason, need to find fault. They need to find inadequacies. They need to find something that builds them up so they can look at someone who's lower than them or less than them. Because that's human nature. You want to be better than the others. You want to be holier than the others. You want to be more righteous than the others. Man, it's a real tough road, isn't it? But see, that's not what God has. Now, as we get into the next chapter, come next week, you're going to learn something about Jacob again. that you probably never even knew. Some of you already have because you heard me talk about this before. But it's good for you to hear a rerun sometimes. So how do we relate to this one? The Apostle Paul said something. Remember what he said? That which happened to Abraham, that what happened to Isaac, that what happened to Jacob, that what happened to Moses, that what happened to Israel, that what happened to this, is for what reason? For us. For us to understand and be, to what? Fear the devil? No. Trust God. Trust God. And bad news comes to you, don't blame, I'm sorry, the federal government of the United States. Don't blame the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. Don't blame the leftists and the rightists. Don't blame them. Just look at God as this, okay, this is where I'm at. You are the one that's going to deliver me out of this. And you wait upon the Lord. Sometimes you want him to do it. Look at it, split, because we're so used to this modern fast thing. You get information quickly, get on the computer, tap, 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 oh, we got that information. We want more, we want information at a fast, quick, and rapid pace. Totally contrary to how God works. He takes his time. So, you know, don't be anxious. Yahshua said, don't be anxious. Don't be anxious. Probably more for our time than probably their time, I don't know. Well, it gives you something to think about. As we get to the next chapter, you're going to learn something more about Jacob. Then we're going to find out, actually, not so much about Jacob, but once again, about Elohim. Because the book of Genesis is about the creator of heaven and earth. It's not about people. It's about him. How he thinks, how he acts, how he walks, how he talks. Everything from Genesis 1 to this far we've gotten here is everything. He's involved with what? What is he not involved with? He's involved with it all. Any statements? Any questions? Any thoughts?
He said, dwell in the land and feed on my faithfulness and basically then watch and see what I do with it. And I'm hearing the stories that God's given us. And it's all about his faithfulness. And if he's making us stay in a place and endure it, he is going to bless us. I'm seeing blessing upon blessing because I'm having a love for people that would have been a fear or a hatred. But there's love there because he takes everything that he walks us through and turns it into beauty.
And there come a time, I think it's going to happen to every one of us. It's as time goes by, that you'll quote Job, though you slay me, I will love you. I will obey you. I trust you. Have confidence in you.
Amen.
And that's a pretty big one, isn't it? Now God could slay you with a total stranger. He could stop the total stranger. Or he just may bring that stranger up and you're dead. And the world will think somebody else killed you. And they'll put him in trial and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, sometimes God says, I'm finished with you. I quote my own brother. Talk about my own brother. He had finished all the assignments that God wanted him to do. His wife has died. He had now sold everything he had. And he was on the very last day, it was Thanksgiving Day, and he went to his stepson's house for Thanksgiving. It was the last time that he was going to see him, because he was going to start moving west to visit myself and my brother, my other sister up in the state of Washington. And the other one, I don't know where she would be, either in New York or L.A. somewhere. I didn't know where she was. She always moves all the place. Anyway, and so he walked out. They were still having their breakfast, afternoon meal, and no one went outside. He went outside, And therefore, he fell, skull cracked wide open, it was over with. And the first thing that went in my mind was, now God, you have said, that's it. Don't need you anymore. Don't need you anymore. You've done what I want you to do. Now I'm going to take your life. And there's one prophet that God took his life exactly the time he said he would take his life. 50 years later, and the man's life was taken. 50-year-old man. Do you remember who that was? Samuel. 50 years later, it's all over with. Done his job. Anointed God who we want to anoint. That's it.